Hello and welcome to Following the Rules. This is a podcast about the rules shaping UK and EU financial services and the people responsible for understanding and implementing them. Because in one of the world's most regulated sectors, following the rules isn't always easy. I'm your host, financial journalist Lucy McNulty, and every episode I'll be asking the most influential personalities in financial regulation for their input on the sector's most pressing issues.
The kind of grandstanding that you see where it's political point scoring is really annoying to the public. So tempting though it might be to engage in that, I don't think it does politicians any good in terms of engendering trust and demonstrating that they are responsible stewards of the public office.
Today's guest discusses the policy and regulatory outlook for artificial intelligence in the US, UK and EU, and outlines how policymakers, regulators and city bosses can best manage the risks arising from the financial industry's increasing use of AI technology. She details the policies that she would like politicians in the US and UK to prioritise ahead of elections in both jurisdictions. She outlines how finance giants' government affairs heads can best navigate these upcoming elections and a potential return of President Trump, and calls on politicians to avoid political point scoring in the run-up to both votes. Lisa Raab has spent more than three decades guiding some of the world's largest financial institutions through regulatory and policy changes affecting their businesses. Her career includes stints as head of government affairs for Europe, Middle East and Africa at US giant Goldman Sachs and chief government and public affairs officer at credit rating agency Moody's. Hi Lisa, welcome to Following the Rules.
Hi Lucy, great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Well, listeners will likely know you from your years working in senior government affairs roles at finance giants, including Goldman Sachs and the credit rating agency Moody's. Could you give us a brief overview of what you're up to now and what's topping your to-do list?
Sure, absolutely. I have been doing research and consulting on the public policy debate around artificial intelligence, which is now rapidly heading into explicit regulatory initiatives with unusual speed for the world of policy and regulation. I became interested in AI ethics, governance, and policy some years ago after the 2008 financial crisis. It seemed a logical follow-on from work that I did on the algorithmic high-frequency trading and dark pool trading regulations for MiFID II. I was part of an Oxford University research initiative called Unlocking the Potential of AI for English Law. I worked up a set of computational integrity parameters for trust in technology for use by big tech or by users of big tech products. And I also helped the European Corporate Governance Institute focus on best governance practices for complex technology and cybersecurity for boards and C-suites. So I've been focused on this area for a while, and I'm now focusing on it with greater intensity, as is I think the entire market. The explosion of accessible and high quality generative AI, I think, caught a lot of people by surprise and has changed the game and really upped the ante for policymakers to address a variety of public and industry anxieties around the potential consequences.
You mentioned MiFID II, which is a vast set of rules that the EU introduced post the 2008 financial crash, which covers wholesale trading activity within the European Union. And you also mentioned dark pools. And for listeners who may not be aware, a dark pool is a privately organized financial forum or exchange for trading securities. And dark pools allow institutional investors to trade without exposure until after the trade has been executed and reported. And you led the industry response on the dark pool regulatory debate during your time at Credit Suisse, which at the time was the leading equity broker dealer operating the largest dark pool in the world. On the topic of AI, as you mentioned, this is a topic that is currently front of mind for financial service executives, regulators and policymakers, and their focus at the moment is how best to responsibly manage the opportunities presented by generative AI, which is the AI technology underpinning content generating tools like ChatGPT. And you have seen decades of regulatory evolution on data privacy and in the capital markets as the securities trading markets have used technology to become faster and more automated. And I've no doubt you'll have an interesting perspective on what we might expect on the pace and evolution of efforts to regulate AI. So I'd love to hear your views on the regulatory response in the US, UK and EU.
So each jurisdiction's policy response to the digital economy broadly is driven in part by its past history of commercially related legislation and regulation, its attention toward innovation, and its focus on companies and consumer protection. In the UK, Prime Minister Sunak and HM government laid out an early and very explicit Brexit AI strategy back in September 2021. And it's been a constant theme and priority focus for the Prime Minister and his government. And more recently, the UK hosted a very ambitious AI summit that brought together public and private sector experts. That's another really good theme. We're seeing increasingly the pulling together of the private sector right alongside the public sector in drafting these rules, along with other stakeholders, of course, appropriately. So the Prime Minister managed to get 28 countries to sign commitments around safe AI and advocated for and got an AI Safety Institute housed in the UK, funded at about £400 million between now and 2030. So he set out really big ambition for the UK to become, in the words of The Economist, an AI superpower. Where the UK has been criticized is for writing white papers, but not moving forward with any concrete legislative or regulatory actions that would give some clarity to business to date. I have no doubt that that's coming. The US approach is rooted in national security considerations, driven in part by the advent of deepfakes coming out of generative AI, particularly given that there is an election pending this year. So there's been a flurry of bills in Congress, none of which have passed yet, that are largely addressing the lack of a federal data privacy law. And the US traditions of laissez-faire for innovative tech underpin the slowness we've seen in the US, both on crypto asset regulation and now AI regulation. Having said that, the US put out an AI risk framework in January 2023. So there are some risk framework standards out there. That's a useful tool for anybody. It's not regulatory, it's voluntary. And there's been a really strong focus around the big picture in the US. Now, the exception to this is the Securities and Exchange Commission's efforts. In July 2023, the SEC promulgated a very narrow but very ambitious attempt at AI systems-based conflict of interests for broker dealers and asset managers. And Chairman Gensler explained that AI models and decisions are unpredictable, and therefore it's hard to determine whether the models place firms' interests ahead of clients. So the proposed rules would require firms to evaluate predictive data analytics, identify and neutralize any conflict of interest. But some of the provisions are so broadly drafted that firms and lawyers have argued that this could come right down to something as basic as an Excel spreadsheet and basic computations, not just AI technology per se. And it's been sharply criticized for that reason as a thinly veiled attempt to ban conflict of interest more broadly and to overturn the existing rules and approach to conflict of interest that are already in the US securities law. So the industry appears to be largely advocating in a similar direction as crypto asset regulation. So they're saying, hey, for the same activity, the same risk, we should have the same rules and we should utilize existing rules rather than AI specific regulations. And they're also advocating, of course, for any AI regulation to be technology neutral, which is another longstanding approach and principle in the United States. So we'll have to see what holds as we move into an election year. You could imagine that there would be an election year imperative, given all the public concern around AI, for some things to get passed. But there are about 31 bills at last count swirling around in the Congress. So we'll have to see which ones prove sticky, and if indeed it's possible for Congress to get anything over the line before Downing pens for the election. So that brings us to the EU's approach that is rooted in the fact that it's long had data privacy legislation in place for individual data protection. And that consumer focus is also evident in the EU's AI Act that was just finalized by the European Parliament. So the EU AI Act is the first major jurisdictional piece of AI market legislation to pass. And the EU has taken a very big picture approach across digital assets, including blockchain and the varied AI tools proliferating in the market. It's taking a risk-based approach, and it defines high-risk AI systems as a relatively large group. That is one of the criticisms people have made. So the EU AI Act distinguishes between providers, which you could say are developers, and deployers, which you could say are roughly users of AI. The definitions are blurry around things like the criteria for training data and a general purpose AI system. What is that? A particularly challenging arena for the EU that's maybe not directly in the act, but very important part of the overall debate on generative AI and the creator economy is the intellectual property and copyright issues around AI created content. So the EU copyright protections has something called the originality requirement. where a first-time artist's work is deemed both new and original, while a copycat version leveraging the original is original but not new. And these are both protected under EU copyright law. And that could prove very interesting in its application to generative AI for pretty obvious reasons. And on dataset training using proprietary datasets, the AI Act obliges the provider to obtain the authorization of the right holder concerned for AI training. And that provision has cross-border applicability. It's extraterritorial. So that sets us up for potential conflict with the fair use exemptive rights under U.S. copyright law, and for the U.S. and other countries, AI tech firms who may be operating in the EU will need to be very aware of these parameters. So, to sum up, the EU approach has been criticized for some of the breadth and ambition, but it does reflect the EU's wider policy precedents and priorities, and no surprise, has some extraterritorial content to it.
The EU AI Act has been criticized as being too prescriptive, and particularly around this classification of what is a high-risk AI. I wonder whether you had any comment on that.
The consistent criticism that the EU has had to bear is for its very detailed rule-based approach to regulation in general. And that's rooted in its Napoleonic Code traditions versus the UK-US legal tradition, which is different and precedent-based, right? I think it's hard to say until we see it starting to be applied in practice and whether any of the ambiguities will get clarified at rulemaking level when detailed rules are promulgated, because that's typically what happened. If we go back to MiFID II for a moment, or other examples of EU financial regulation, there were often, let's say, broadly construed definitions. And that happens in the EU because it's how you get that many member states to agree to something. You should keep it a little vague, and then people can interpret it how they want. Or you kick the can down the road and you put a hard and fast interpretation into rules later. So I don't want to be too quick to judge the EU on some of the ambiguity points. The plus is that it does at least give some guidance. This is all so new and business needs guidance. Whether this is the right guidance is another thing we can debate.
Okay, and ChatGPT came into being in the midst of the drafting of the EU AI Act. And ChatGPT's launch really has put the opportunities that Gen AI tools can represent front and center of people's minds. And financial services institutions are spending a lot of time and effort currently to determine how best they can use Gen AI in as responsible a way as possible. What are the major regulatory challenges for generative AI use in your view? And how unique are these challenges? You've referenced MiFID II a couple of times. How much can we draw from prior regulatory experiences of complex tech-driven products and markets?
During the debates on algorithmic and high-frequency trading, the European Commission and ESMA, in some of the early drafts, proposed that the broker-dealer investment industry be required to share with ESMA and/or the national regulators the initial code and all subsequent changes for any algorithmic securities trading. So the issues with this that we pointed out from an industry viewpoint were, number one, the code is proprietary, sensitive intellectual property, and machine learning algos, number two, iterate pretty constantly in response to markets. So having to constantly refile the code is pretty much mission impossible. Three, the regulators could hire every ex-trader and compliance person possible and be understaffed for the task, even if they still wanted to do it. And finally, most importantly, the regulators would be putting themselves on the hook to evaluate, spot, and mitigate systemic risk from these models. They rapidly realized that this was not the right way to go. And later on, the concept moved to putting the onus back on the industry to police its own algorithms. And the concept moved toward ensuring that there's a kill switch so that if the algorithm ran amok in the market, you could shut it down. So let's put a pin in that. Artificial generative intelligence, AGI's ability to escape the box, as it's called, and that's a whole thing if you Google it. It's fascinating to read about how it might escape the box. This prompted sci-fi movies long ago, before we had generative AI on the table, from the Terminator to the Matrix. So the MiFID II solution of a kill switch to prevent a securities flash crash or other systemic failure induced by algo trading run amok has been proposed for generative AI in the US, and it's not necessarily as strong or complete a solution. Even though AI is, of course, based on algorithms, it's a lot more complicated, and it's also moving very, very fast. So the concern is that a highly intelligent AGI may evolve the ability to exploit and evade human systems control. So you put a kill switch in, and the AI kills the kill switch. The worst case scenario for AGI doesn't have a convincing solution at present beyond prevention. So you have to then focus on governing the model from the outset and trying to prevent the AI from going rogue. We can also draw from some of the attempts to regulate crypto, but crypto is in a very different category, at least today, in terms of its limited scope of market impact and lack of systemic financial risk potential compared with generative AI. AI evolution is moving much faster than crypto in many ways. So the industry take has been same risk and regulation for both crypto assets and AI, and that a risk proportionate approach is warranted. Another key element from the financial debates around dark pool trading was transparency. And that's something we should come back to because the open versus closed nature is important. We're talking about AI as if it's all one thing, and it's not.
Okay. As you say, it is important to note that there is OpenAI where the code underpinning those tools is made publicly available, and OpenAI tools therefore offer greater transparency and scope for innovation. And then there is closed AI, which prioritizes data security and confidentiality by keeping the source code restricted to private use and unable to be altered or built upon by users. So, what are the transparency challenges posed by open versus closed AI?
So open source software has been around for a very long period of time. The internet was one of the original wide open initiatives, and people in the tech world get very passionate about open source and why that's an important thing to do, and with good reason. So if we look at the current environment around AI and think about financial services context in particular, transparency and trust are themes that we're familiar with from financial sector regulation and post-crisis reform. Reflections. What we're really talking about here is another iteration of the debate on trusted third-party intermediaries. Can we trust AI tech and sectors like financial services implementing AI tech? The financial crisis rocked public and regulatory confidence in the trustworthiness of banks and other financial intermediaries and the complex financial products they were selling. Post-crisis, we saw the launch of Satoshi Nakamoto's Bitcoin white paper, which argued that the crisis demonstrated even central banks, as well as private sector financial institutions, were no longer viable trusted intermediaries, and that the time had come to set up a payment system based on cryptographic proof instead of trust, and that this would provide better protection to transacting intermediaries. So blockchain was born with its initial claims of unhackability and the debate on whether it's possible to trust the technology more than companies or other institutions like central banks took off. Blockchain also moved the debate on open versus closed source software into the payment space with the public, private, and permissioned versions of blockchain underpinning the different major cryptocurrencies and other things that are being built off those public blockchains. So that all sets the stage for the debate around open versus closed source AI, which has similar trade-offs between transparency, innovation, risk, control, and governance, but there are also some unique features. So, for one thing, it's less binary. There's a lot of middle ground going on. So, a few examples. There's a great article by Irene Solomon at Hugging Face, which is one of the major players in this space. She's done some really great thinking and explaining of the range of the AI market tools. And a number of these tools are a hybrid of open and closed. And if you had to guess, I think most of us would assume that ChatGPT and Midjourney are more closed, but they are publicly accessible, but hosted systems. So, they're in the middle. And then everything else is on a sliding scale. So, for example, Meta chose the closed approach for its make a video model initially, and then said it would gradually allow some access to researchers for innovation and critiquing. Closed source AI bears very similar black box trust concerns as algorithmic trading of securities in dark pools, but the concerns are even higher the more powerful the system's deployed. And developers have recognized that there is no standardized release norms and no standard setting body to produce these anytime soon. So that has prompted some caution and a shift toward closedness. And the resulting concentration of power among some of these AI players is generating significant concern in part because of this transparency issue. Now, it's enormously complex. It's moving, and some things go from closed to open or partly open. So it's very challenging for the layperson to keep track of it all. But it will be an increasingly important question for how regulations are construed and how they apply to open versus closed environments.
You've mentioned algorithmic trading, and that in terms of a viable solution to policing that activity, the regulators settled on encouraging financial institutions to police their own algorithmic trading activity. And I wondered where there is a role for self-governance in relation to the AI question. Is there still room for governance and industry standards to establish the best practice needed as we go forward?
Well, you could argue in a way that the open approach, if it's fully open, is really community self-governance. Whether that's enough in the case of technology as sophisticated AI is another question. The tech industry in the United States gets criticized for focusing very heavily on self-governance, which is code for avoiding regulation in the eyes of some. A fundamental ethos: don't get in the way of the technology while it's iterating. Don't throw regulations at it, you'll cut it off. And similarly, the EU gets criticized for the reverse, for rushing in and maybe choking off innovation. I think that there is still room for self-governance because this stuff is so complex and so fast moving. And as firms are experimenting with it behind closed doors, they're going to need to have their own governance internally in place to safely iterate and work with the generative AI tools, whether they're taking third-party solutions down off the shelf and augmenting them, or even trying to come up with their own originated AI stuff. Self-governance is going to be key in particular for closed source AI as well. And that always will be true. So this is no different to financial firms innovating internally as they develop new models, products, and services.
Are you concerned about how to manage and capture off-channel communications in a rapidly shifting regulatory environment? Global Relay provides fully compliant electronic communications archiving and messaging solutions for the global financial sector to help you keep up with the expanding web of data types in this hyper-connected world. We've built a rock-solid foundation for compliant business communication, from a mobile app through to intelligent archiving, superior data connectors, and proactive surveillance to track it all. Founded in 1999, Global Relay delivers services to over 20,000 customers in 90 countries, including 22 of the top 25 banks. Global Relay's integrated compliance solutions enable regulated organizations to meet collaboration, privacy, and security requirements. For more on how you can achieve e-communications compliance without compromise, visit www.globalrelay.com.
You mentioned that self-governance, particularly for closed AI technology, would be important going forward, and also that it's a very complex area for the layperson. And in that context, I'm wondering, what is the realistic appropriate role for the C-suite and boards on governance of sophisticated technology like AI in the financial sector and more broadly?
Great question. It's really crucial that the C-suite and the board of any company seriously engaging in experimental AI initiatives, especially generative AI, be absolutely on top of the governance and ethical considerations. AI ethics, that's another whole massive topic. And each of the major AI companies have their own principles and code around ethical AI. So there are plenty of standards out there from the private sector companies, from some of the public institutes, and now increasingly from the NIST in the US, which is a government organization. And using third-party, independent, and respected guidance is better than trying to come up with your own codes of conduct if you're not an AI firm to begin with, right? But the AI space race is moving so much faster and with such very high stakes, boards and governance bodies really need to step up the pace and accelerate. They need qualified individuals, which are in short supply. This is also an issue for the regulators because the pay and the scale of hiring for AI talent is massive, right? But boards and governance bodies really need to also be willing to have the hard discussions around ethics and where ethical considerations appropriately override profit opportunities and motives. That really is the role of boards and C-suite governance bodies. Leaving this to the tech level within the firm is no longer appropriate. So there was a period where the financial sector and other sectors were hiring chief technology officers and chief information security officers apace. This was mainly cybersecurity driven. And chief technology officers' roles were evolving away from their prior role as a steward of a previous generation of technology toward how to introduce and vet new technologies. So that's all very well, but you really need folks at the upper level with the big picture picture perspective. And ideally, what you want is somebody with a technology background sitting on the board. So somebody who's actually sat at one of these AI firms, if you're going to be really serious about using it, would be an appropriate draft for your next vacant board seat, would be my advice.
Okay. And it's worth noting in terms of the role of self-governance when it comes to AI use, codes of best practice can be valuable in terms of setting some parameters for good conduct in an unknown area, but they do face criticism in terms of their ability to stall innovation, particularly when it comes to a fast-moving area such as AI. They can set best practice at a particular time point, and that may evolve. And if you're not continue revisiting those codes, then that may be a problem.
I would say to that, Lucy, that the same is true, if not more so, on legislation and rulemaking, which takes longer to revise. If you look at the time frame around revisions to MiFID II or pick any other of your favorite EU regulations, if you don't have the ability to nimbly adjust and tweak the regulatory arena, I would say that codes, in a way, should be more readily accessible and amenable to adjustment. But there's never going to be anything perfect here. I think one of the really important things to note is that there's a lot of appetite out there for some kind of global governing body. I'm a little bit skeptical about whether that's going to be feasible. We are in what some have called the deep globalization era, where bodies like the World Trade Organization and even the attempts at harmonizing financial sector legislation on both sides of the Atlantic or more broadly have run into sticky trouble. In the times that we're in and with the sensitivity of this technology, it's going to be even more challenging. So if you look at cybersecurity, for example, cybersecurity is not on the agenda of the G20. Why? Because the people at that table are not all trusted parties for something that sensitive. So the G7, lo and behold, has become relevant again and has become the vehicle for those countries to share and try to promulgate common approaches to cybersecurity. So I imagine we could see something similar happen here with AI, but any kind of really binding rule set like you have from the World Trade Organization, I just think is never going to be on the table in the times that we're in.
Okay. Does it concern you that there may not be scope for a global standard setting body in the AI space?
We can all be concerned about AI and whether it escapes the box for a lot of reasons. I don't believe it's realistic to expect a global standards body. And I think, unfortunately, if we look at existing bodies that are out there, we're all born out of conflict, out of war, out of major log jams with trade. There was some big inflection point that led to the will to come around the table and create those bodies. That could come. I hope for our sake it doesn't come, because it might mean that there's a major AI-induced crisis that people then feel, okay, so we are going to have to do something that's a little more binding here. But the reality is, a global standards body, that's going to be pretty tough in the world that we're in now.
Okay, and all this comes as we're approaching an election in both the US and the UK. What would you most like the winning parties to prioritize, and why?
The state of omni-crisis that we're in has been much remarked upon. And I think finding ways not to issue so many alarm bells to the public, but without concealing things, is something that I hope we can move away from in some of the electioneering. But I fear that there will be still an awful lot of that. Otherwise, it's long been hoped that there would be federal data privacy rules in the US, because the proliferation of state level rules is really going to be very messy. And this is like the EU story of why you want harmonized EU regulation. So that was something that the Biden administration had originally put down on their to-do list, and it's gotten shoved to the side. So with the AI debates, it wouldn't surprise me if that one got lit up again if we had a Biden 2.0. If we have a Trump 2.0, I think the national security issues and focus around technology will continue. He was very closely advised in his last administration by Peter Thiel, and he's not a guy who likes a lot of government and a lot of government resource, but he did put a lot of focus on cybersecurity, AI, and other technology to ensure that the U.S. didn't fall behind and wasn't vulnerable to state actors. So I think you would see the national security approach continuing in Trump 2.0. And the financial subsector that concerns me the most vis-a-vis generative AI is, surprise, not banking. It's the insurance sector, particularly health insurance. So this is a sector that has been behind the curve for years on deploying better technology. I recall a conversation with a colleague who left investment banking and went into one of the largest global insurance companies. And I asked how it was going. The answer was, "Lisa, they're still using Lotus Notes." This was admittedly a decade ago, but it pointed up to me how underinvested the insurance sector was compared to investment banking on state-of-the-art, efficient systems. And technology debt is a very persistent problem for a lot of industry. And it's not easy to just leapfrog into brand new tech, in particular data. So technology debt leads to firms not being able to leverage all of their data. And generative AI is all about leveraging that data and making sure that it's done in a safe and appropriate and unbiased way. So the healthcare insurance and wider healthcare industry is moving very rapidly into AGI. And there's some pretty worrying anecdotal evidence of harm already caused by bias in that arena. So I haven't seen anybody, the regulators or the policymakers, really focusing on that. And I think as a public safety issue, it should be of a very high priority.
Okay. And I should say in the UK, the Labour Party is predicted to win the next election, and they have put forward a manifesto outlining the approach that they would take to financial services policy, which, unusually for a party in opposition, actually committed to keeping a number of the regulatory initiatives that the ruling Conservative government is currently pursuing. But that has proved quite popular within the UK markets after a period of significant regulatory change. In terms of politicians managing the omnicrisis environment, are there any headline mistakes that you see politicians make that you would like them to avoid going forward?
The classic electioneering that we see really has generated fatigue, speaking from the perspective of what is now my current home jurisdiction, the United States. There's a mission fatigue, okay, we've got the same old candidates and we're going to rerun some of the same old debates, and it's all going to be raucous. It's very unseemly now watching debates in Congress and seeing people shouting each other down. It's interesting because the UK Parliament has always had a reputation for being pretty much a blood sport. Parliamentary debate. And there's some merit in that. I don't want to say you should have no conflict, but the kind of grandstanding that you see where it's political point scoring is really annoying to the public. So tempting though it might be to engage in that, I don't think it does politicians any good in terms of engendering trust and demonstrating that they are responsible stewards of the public office.
So be the adults in the room going forward as we go into these elections, and that will do a lot to engender trust in the political space as well.
Trust is really important. If you look at the 2024 Edelman Trust Barometer, it surveys 32,000 respondents, 28 countries, about 1,150 respondents per country. And this year, it focused on trust and innovation as its leading theme. And that's a first. So, just a little context, Edelman is one of the large global communication firms, and they've been studying trust in society via this barometer report for over 20 years now. And it rank orders societal levels of trust in government versus the private sector, media, and NGOs as they rise and fall. So, the 2024 Trust Barometer draws out a new set of societal concerns around innovation and technology, broader than AI, but also specifically surveying the public attitude toward AI. The main thesis of the Trust Barometer is what they term the paradox around rapid innovation's potential contributions to prosperity, but its potential to exacerbate trust issues, societal instability, and polarization. The report shows government at the lowest rated ever on competence and ethics, behind the media, followed by NGOs, and with business as the most trusted, as competent and ethical. Interestingly, the UK is actually second from the lowest in trust on business at 48%. And over the last 10 years, there's been a shift toward lower trust for companies headquartered in global powers, specifically China and the US. So now, if we think of that backdrop and we turn now to innovation and AI, the barometer says that business is the most trusted to integrate innovation into society. And of the innovation surveyed, AI is at a balanced crossroads, with 30% of the surveyed respondents embracing it and 35% rejecting it as an innovation. And then a very high average, 59% believe that government lacks the competence to regulate emerging innovations. And interestingly, the UK is 66% and the US at 63% doubt on this point, so well above the average. And the survey does have some takeout that may be relevant in this election year. So it says to earn public acceptance, vetting by scientists and ethicists will help. So will making the science more transparent and publicly accessible. So that touches back to open versus closed AI and what that might mean in terms of acceptability and trust. And the report also highlights confidence in effective regulation as really key to driving the adoption of AI. And so the lack of confidence the respondents feel for government to regulate innovation effectively basically is something that needs to be addressed, because society needs to feel confident in the innovations and the regulation and that it will lead to a better future.
Okay. 2024 is something of a mega year for elections. Not only will the UK likely see a change of government, but the US, as you've said, could be navigating a return of President Trump, and Mexico, India, South Africa, and the European Parliament also be holding elections. What advice do you have for government affairs professionals in financial services ahead of all this? How should regulatory and government affairs professionals be preparing for what's to come?
The state of omni-crisis that we're in can generate enormous fatigue or even analysis paralysis as firms and their strategy and policy teams try to layer up the analysis of fast-moving political risks, policy and regulatory developments, plus accelerating technology change. But I think this is the perfect environment to drive even reluctant technophobes into using generative AI tools to help with research and tracking developments, to free up their bandwidth for the more sophisticated 360-degree analysis that's needed to navigate well in this very high velocity and high stakes environment of tornado twister changes that we're in. That spin cycle is not going to stop anytime soon, but I use it advisedly. We all have heard and have seen these tools, hallucinations. So as long as you oversee it and take a little bit of caution, there's plenty that can be done to help shortcut the business of writing summaries of legislation, writing briefing notes that would free up more time for the less commoditized, routinized parts of the job, and more time for what are the really fun elements, which is the strategizing and the looking ahead. The other piece of advice I would have is an election year means the legislative agenda tends to stall out in most jurisdictions. So it's really always a good time for contact development, for looking ahead and thinking, do I have the right contacts if the government were to change over and some of the heads of the regulators were to change over? That happens in the United States. It's a good time to sow those seeds of getting in on the ground floor, meeting and greeting and forging the ties that you might not always have the time to do, but you may need in the future for the forthcoming policy and legislative debates.
Okay. Anything government affairs professionals, regulatory affairs professionals should be avoiding doing?
This is a personal opinion, but I believe that maintaining political neutrality serves you well, because it enables you to be an honest broker and engage with stakeholders from multiple political perspectives. So in the US, the government affairs industry, there's a lot of it that's very partisan, but I've always found in my career, observing neutrality has enabled me to play more of a role as a trusted broker of ideas. So I would humbly offer up that piece of advice in these very politically fraught times.
That's challenging when you're in a very polarizing political environment. For example, the US could be navigating a return of President Trump, who arguably encourages that polarization. Any tips in terms of navigating a Trump government in that context?
There is industry support for a Trump 2.0. Why? Because he is viewed as being relatively business friendly, at least in terms of laissez-faire on most regulation, and in terms of being tough on China, tough on trade historically, and in terms of his approach to tax policy. So those are all elements where if Trump 2.0 comes to be, business should do what it can to have the advantages that come out of an environment like that. But a lot can change, and his previous administration may not be 100% guide to his approach in the future.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you have for anyone wishing to pursue a career in government affairs or public policy?
Absolutely do it. It's a fascinating and exciting space. Some of my longstanding advice is be adaptable. Governments and regulators do change. So for your external stakeholder network, it's not just who you know, it's who you can get to know. Second, learn as much as you can about the business or the organization that you represent. This makes you a more trusted, value-added partner for your firm and also for your external stakeholders. And finally, triangulate policy and regulatory change with relevant opportunities for the business as well as risk to add maximum value and to demonstrate your team's value.
Okay. And lastly, and generally, what's one upcoming or current challenge that you believe not enough people are paying attention to?
Well, a longstanding concern I've had is on the challenge to the rule of law that has been coming up in surprising places, notably the US and the UK, as well as various EU member states. And my advice here is that business needs to get off the sidelines and focus a little more on advocating for rule of law. Now, historically, this feels uncomfortable to business, but the rule of law is fundamentally what underpins a trusted, stable business environment. So it is about good business and the ability to do business in many key jurisdictions. So for the financial sector, I've always said a strong, independent central bank, a strong, independent securities regulator, and antitrust authority are paramount. And we have seen erosion of some of these in new EU member states. Independence of the judiciary is also key, and that's increasingly at issue across the developed world. And the UK's position and the role of English law as the jurisdiction of choice for contracts law, in my humble opinion, should be something at the heart of a more explicit UK strategy for its post-Brexit business competitiveness and to underpin strong, stable, confident capital markets.
Okay. It's quite reflective of how dramatic the last 10 years have been, that this is now something that you're saying that businesses have to advocate for, the rule of law. 10 years ago, that wouldn't have been in question.
Part and parcel of the partisan and febrile political environment that we're in. I recall after January 6th in the US, industry was aghast. And it really took people a while to figure out, okay, what can we say? What should we say? What should our role be in this historic and very challenging moment? And what we focused on was the rule of law. And that was where everybody could come together and agree anything that's undermining the rule of law is bad for business, and we have to stand up on it. The risk of business not doing that is that rule of law just continues to be eroded, unchecked, that policymakers, politicians are tempted to migrate more and more in an authoritarian direction because there's no check on it.
To what extent do you get a sense that the bosses at these businesses are conscious that that is an important role that they should be taking on now?
They're very concerned about the rule of law erosions. Whether they're prepared to step up is another matter. Because in some instances, when you step up on sensitive issues, you get your head blown off. And there have been many examples of individual companies in the US that have stood up on civil liberty issues or other issues, and there have been consequences. But I'm not suggesting that businesses go out and advocate on everything, because there are things where they don't have the expertise or where indeed their heads will be blown off. But on rule of law, which is fundamental to underpinning the business environment and capital markets, I just think that one's a no-brainer.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Lisa. This has been a really informative conversation. I really appreciate your time today.
You're welcome, Lucy. It's been a pleasure, as always.
You've been listening to Following the Rules with Lucy McNulty. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd be very grateful if you could rate, review, and subscribe on all the usual channels. It helps other people get to know us too.